Christian hit music. Listen live 24 hours a day everywhere at spiritfmonline.com. Interact with us on social media. Check spiritfmonline.com for links.
I hear the sound of a mighty rushing wind.
Welcome to Issues of Life on Spirit 88.3 FM. 60 minutes of news, prophecies, music, and the Word every Saturday from 8 to 9 p.m. Get revived, inspired, motivated, and warned about the times you're living in. Prophecies of old are unfolding right before our eyes every day. Verses in the Bible are today's headline news. Don't be ignorant, but be an informed believer. Join Brother Eben for the next 60 minutes and be blessed. Get this edition and others from spiritissues.info.
We'll be going.
Good evening. We thank God for another Saturday evening. It's always a privilege to come your way on weekends, Saturdays, and we thank God for the gift of life, the first edition of February, and so fast the way the days are going. I was telling someone this week that it seems this year's January seems to be the fastest. I mean, because Christmas seems to be just, the memory of Christmas, last year's Christmas, is just too close to let it look like, it's a month so far. And well, but that's it. Time is moving, and we just have to make use of the times that we have. This is Eben, and from now till 9 p.m., I'll be with you. Last week and last 2 weeks, I started talking about the need for evangelism and the need to talk about souls, the lost, and all that. And tonight, I'll be continuing from there. It's so important, though it's something that we are not talking about that much in the body of Christ. Some churches are actually talking about it. That's good. Some have the vision of going out this year, opening branches and all that. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. And I believe this should be the clarion call for all believers. We should see the need and the importance, because sometimes we just let it go as if it's not important and we just let it slide. But this year, as we started this edition, this series, I'm talking about evangelism and the need for missions and all that. We'll be talking about these things. We have some tracts, we'll be printing more, and those who need tracts can get some to use. Those who also want to support to print more, we'll just make these available to make it easier. So we have the children one, those for the children. It's out of print now, but we're printing the next few days or weeks. We're printing more of the children one. Those ones mainly good for the children, the primary school, you can give it to your children when they go to school. They should share it with their friends and all that, because you have to also have to teach them the importance of reaching out to their friends and mates and all. And now, so we have a lot to do, and for the youth, the teen, the youth, and the normal general adult tracts and all, so that we can really do the work. Because for some people, tracts always helps to open up the conversation, and it's a good tool. At least, you may not be able to talk to the person, but the person can read, so you give it to the person at his own time and whatever, in the car he can be reading, and alongside, contact the numbers as the need arises. So tracts are important, and we need to do more. This year, as the grace and God provides and all that, we'll be doing more of these things, and we'll be talking about these things on this program. All right, and let me start the news, go through a few of the news items. We have as election loom in Pakistan, Christians fear their voices will not be heard. And you know, Pakistan is one of the places where the persecution is really rife when it comes to Christian persecution. And we have more than 24 churches and 100 Christian homes were vandalized last year. And Christians in Jarawala, Pakistan, are looking to the government for help. But with the elections looming on February 8th, many fear their voices will go unheard. And that's the challenge with this predominantly Islamic country. So Christians are virtually, they have no say in Pakistan. Then in Britain, you have Britain to test fire a nuclear missile in major show of force. You know, the ramping up of wars and rumors of wars is just something. You know, if you follow the world news, it's all about war here, war there, skirmishes, rumors of wars, tension rising, and potential third world war, as some will put it in some of the news. And all, you know, things are just not looking good when it comes to these things. And Britain is to test a nuclear missile in a major show of force. Show of force to who? You know, but you know, they are all flexing their muscles. We have to test and let everybody know we have it. Then we have this headline too, says Israel and Lebanon preparing for inevitable war. I mean, some of the headlines, inevitable war, because if you follow what is happening in Gaza and then the southern Lebanon with the Hezbollah and all these things, it's as if it's just waiting. War is just waiting to happen. And then another headline says U.S. strikes the Houthi rebels projectiles preparing to launch at their ships. And Yemen, the terror group there sponsored by Iran, they are also posing a lot of problems in the, you know, the travel zone for the ships in the Aden Sea, that part of the that stretch. And it's also causing problems. So the US military and other European nations are also ramping up attacks against the Yemen groups. These are all Iran-backed groups, but you know, so Iran is using these as proxies to fight against, you know, the West, and you know, indirectly. And this week there was a big one where part in Lebanon, the Lebanon border area, three American soldiers were killed by a drone, and now that's yesterday, America had to retaliate after a lot of pressure on the U.S. government to do something. So this headline says U.S. unleashes just 30 minutes of hell on Syria and Iraq as Biden walks tightrope with short and sharp revenge strike. So the Iraq headquarters of militia Hashd al-Shaabi, also known as People's Mobilization Committee, can be seen in ruins following a series of strikes by the U.S. B-1 bombers in revenge for the deaths of three U.S. soldiers. Other images show buildings turned into rubble after 125 bombs were dropped within 30 minutes. Wow. Officials in Syria and Iraq claim that the strikes from B-1 bombers killed at least 34 people. President Joe Biden and the U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin have both suggested that this targeted retaliation was just the beginning, as eyes now turn to Tehran over a potential retaliation. And this is where the challenge comes in, because all these groups that the U.S. retaliated against are proxies of Iran. So indirectly, the tension is mounting between U.S. and Iran. And this is something that people are dreading, that we shouldn't get there, because the U.S.-Iran war is a whole different thing altogether. Then we have Biden warns U.S. airstrikes are only the beginning. So how would the ending be like? That's a big question. Then Iraq warns the Middle East is now on the brink of the abyss. So Iraq has slammed U.S. airstrikes following Friday's attack, warning that aggressive strike puts the region on the brink of the abyss. Okay, and then this headline too says Russia and China warn against cycle of retaliation as Biden threatens to target their ally Iran after drone attack killed U.S. soldiers. So you have the friends of Iran, Russia, China showing concern about U.S. retaliations. You know, this is what makes some of these things very troubling, because it may look like it's just a country-to-country affair, but then it can draw in other countries who have interest and allies and all that. So these are all very volatile situations that we are seeing that can be something else, but we hope it doesn't get into something else. Then this headline says, U.S. State Department considering recognition of a Palestinian state. And this is one worrying thing, because, you know, whenever they start talking about this Palestinian state, that means they are going to divide Jerusalem. And dividing Jerusalem is a whole big issue, which God still frowns on. And, you know, it's interesting how some years back I discussed it on this program, and I gave instances where countries that called for the division of Jerusalem, creation of the Palestinian state, or even took measures sanctioning Israel and all those things, soon after faced serious issues in terms of some of the hurricanes, some of the strongest hurricanes U.S. experienced years back, were soon after such calls of Jerusalem being divided. There was one that Japan made a call, and soon after they suffered some massive earthquake. I mean, there are a number of, I don't know if I will see that document, but it's been some years now, but they listed major disasters in the countries, and then as to the timelines as to when they put pressure on Israel or they attacked Israel to divide and to give Palestinian cause and all that, and then the consequences of, I mean, that came upon those countries when they did those calls. So it's not just a simple case of the Palestinian states give them their independence or their space and all that. You know, today I saw this funny, I'll call it funny, and though very worrying too, a Nigerian pastor saying that the Israel we see today is not the Israel that is in the Bible. That land is not Israel. And it's like, and people are watching him in church and they are nodding their head, and it's like, I mean, what ignorance can do is something. Because, I mean, I just wish I'll be able to ask just one question. So the Egypt in the Bible, is it the same Egypt now? The Lebanon, the Syria, the Turkey, the Iran, because Persia, it's all, I mean, it's like you just wonder. The places, and even now, I mean, if you are talking of the various archaeological findings that confirms David and all the various major archaeological findings they've seen in Lebanon and Israel and even part of Saudi and all. So there's a lot to confirm that is the same region that is in the Bible is the same region we are talking about when you talk of the Middle East. But yet this man just deceiving his members that the Israel today is not the same Israel, and so people should not believe that. I mean, come on. All right, so we go on. We have this headline that says, Catholic clergy and scholars demand the Pope Francis withdraw the declaration authorizing gay couple blessings. And the controversy of this gay couple blessings is still going on, and more than 90 Catholic clergy, scholars and lay people are calling on the Pope to withdraw a controversial Vatican document authorizing priests to offer blessings to same-sex couples. And I also saw another one, bishops from Africa are also putting a lot of pressure, and the Pope is also making a statement. I saw a headline that he's saying that it's Africans and then a few other people who are making complaints about it. Well, you know, this blessing thing, I don't know. But it's just one of the worrying trends that we are seeing in these times. Then this headline says, United Church of Christ lost over 286,000 members and 550 churches in the last decade. And this is very worrying. For a church to lose this number of members and this number of churches to be closed is really, really worrying. But then you listen to it and you understand that, well, it's for a worthy cause. It's for a good reason. God bless those who left anyway. The United Church of Christ declined by over 286,000 members from 2012 to 2022, according to recently released statistics on the theologically liberal mainline Protestant denomination. A recent report by the UCC Center for Analytics, Research and Development and Data found that from 2012 to 2022, the denomination experienced a net loss of 286,000 members and then 551 congregations. Additionally, from 2020 to 2022, the UCC went from having 4,794 congregations to 4,603 congregations, with membership dropping from approximately 773,000 to approximately 712,000. Then the 2022 membership numbers also represented a sharp decline from 1960, when the denomination reportedly had approximately 2.2 million members. Wow, 2.24 million members, over three times its current count. The UCC report acknowledges a considerable decline from 2005 to 2007. Then, that's when the UCC experienced, now listen to the reason, a loss of nearly three congregations per week on average due to its General Synod passing a resolution supporting same-sex marriage. So, because of the decision to support same-sex marriage, people left the church. And that's why I said, God bless those who left the church. Because, I mean, clearly, churches that go this way, you can no longer say they are churches. They are something else. Because the justification that you want to give to allow that, it's not biblical. It's outside the standard that the Word of God holds when it comes to marriage. So, any church that goes that way, clearly, your members, those who are really, really, really spiritual enough, should be able to walk out. And that's what they've done. And I think it's a good thing that those people left. This headline, Christian parents say daughter removed from their care after refusing to affirm gender identity. So Montana's Republican Governor Greg Bianfort said officials followed state policy in a case concerning Christian parents who claimed they lost custody of their daughter after they refused to allow her to undergo experimental transmedicalization. The parents, Todd and Krista Kostler, said they opposed allowing doctors to take their 14-year-old daughter down such a path, in part because of their values, morals, and religious beliefs. The state of Montana's Child and Family Services took the teen into their care last month. And this is so sad and worrying when your child is virtually being destroyed and the government says that, well, it's not your child, it's our child, so we can do whatever we want. I mean, I saw one news this week where a 12-year-old child is also a girl, 12-year-old girl, is being treated as a boy in school without the parents' consent. And you know, it keeps seeing these news all over the place, and it's just bad as to why they just want to destroy these children early. But then you see, the devil is not waiting for them to grow up before he attempts to destroy them. He's doing it early, because the earlier the better. I mean, get them young and they are yours forever, as they say. But you know, it's serious, because the trans one, if you watch some of the reports on this trans surgeries and the medicalization and all that they talk about, is virtually a complete destruction of the body. And the saddest videos you can see are those who underwent the procedure. So maybe a male did the surgery to become a female, and now they regret, and then they do a reverse again, trying to become male again. And of course, you can never get it perfect again, and vice versa. So female to male, and then I want to go back to female. You see, there's the deception out there that gives them the hope that, oh, when they do it, they'll be satisfied. But they get to do these transformational surgeries and all that, and then they realize they are not satisfied in their new bodies, and then they become depressed, and suicide rates are even high, very high amongst these trans people, because you see, that's how the devil plays the game. Deceives you, transform your body, change your body, you are who you are, you can be what you want to be, and after you get to that state, you are still not satisfied, you are not happy, and then now he comes again, okay, you are not fit to be in this world, so just kill yourself and end it all. I mean, fastest way to get to hell. That's what I mean. See, the devil is just playing the game, and it's very unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. Then we have Planned Parenthood, one of the largest abortion, okay, in the US, is the largest abortion provider. Posted a video, educational video, or sex education video, and that says that virginity is completely made up concept, and it says it's not something to strive for. You know, this is what they are doing. If growing up, the children and the teens and the youth will stay chaste and will be virgins, they will be out of business. I mean, that's the bottom line. Planned Parenthood will be out of business if the youth, the teenagers, decide to stay right and not do what they have to, they don't have to do. They will be out of business because their business booms on the abortion. So they would attack anything that encourages abstinence, because as more people abstain, that means more students abstain, that means they lose business. Their business is in the killing, and this is where they make the millions and billions of dollars, you know, doing the killings and selling the body parts to companies. I mean, use it for all sorts of things. They give it to their occult people to use their sacrifices and all that, and the companies that also use body parts in their products. Oh, this world is something else. This world. But then this week there was a big one. Elon Musk has he made a statement on, you know, he has a company, Neuralink, and this is supposed to do transhumanism. So they've been doing the major, I mean, lot of research and all that. But this week he said they've done the first successful, whatever, surgery. So let me read the report. Elon Musk has big plans to advance transhumanism with Neuralink. That's his company. Elon Musk's Neuralink brain chip company, has inserted its first device in a human, according to the billionaire CEO. Musk has previously revealed big plans for the chip, and we rounded up some of them below. Musk went into detail about his plan for his Neuralink brain chip during a Q&A session on the Clubhouse app in 2021. And then quote, it says, you could probably save states in the brain. So if you were to die, your state could be returned in the form of another human body or a robot body, unquote, he said. The billionaire compared this saving process to backing up a video game. It also hoped that Neuralink brain chip will be able to help humans compete with artificial intelligence. Musk has previously expressed concerns that humans could face an AI extinction event if they don't take action to compete with the technology. Whilst attending the UK's Global AI Safety Summit late last year, Musk said there is some chance, about above zero, that AI will kill us all. I think it's slow, but there's some chance. One of his long-term goals is for people to reach symbiosis with AI. That means he wants humans to reach a state in which they coexist with AI in a mutually beneficial relationship. He thinks brain chip could be one way to do this. You know, they want to play God. They are trying to play God. You know, because they think God didn't make us smart enough, and we need to be smarter than we are. So now enhancing human beings with chips, putting a chip in the brain so that now transhumans. See, and this is the danger. This is where this whole trans thing is becoming worrying, because, you know, the trans movement, the trans agenda is one of the insults to God, biggest insults to God, because it's virtually questioning the creativity and the creation of God. creation that God has made. So God created man in his own image, and he said, he, God, after creating them, said, it is good. Whatever he's created was good. Now human beings, who are also part of his creation, think they are wiser and smarter than he, God. So they want to make humans better than how God made us, by changing ourselves, transforming ourselves. So that's where you have this transgender movement. So male can be changed to female, female can be changed to whatever. People are doing all sorts of changes. You know, actually, there are some that when you see, you just be amazed. People are all sorts of making themselves to be whatever they think they can be. Human beings wanting to make themselves like animals. I saw one who, I mean, that one more of a mental issue then, because for a normal working human person, saying that no, I feel like I should be in a wheelchair, so you intentionally paralyze yourself so that you'll be in a wheelchair. Something else, so trans, whatever they have a name for that as well. You know, all sorts of things. People are changing themselves. They want to have horns on their foreheads, so they do surgery so that horns. Come on. These are all demons, I mean, influencing people to do these things. And but you see, this agenda of the transhumanism, where now humans become like part robot, part human, yeah, semi-human, semi-robot type of thing. This is what Elon Musk is trying to work out of this Neuralink company, where chips will then be embedded in humans, and then they can be they can do stuff. So you're a human being and part robot, think smart like a robot, and then, you know, they will do their best, but you know, God is just watching them and just laughing. Because you see, when human beings think they are smart enough, just one breath from God is enough to silence them, and they should go on and do what they want to do, because some of these things is just breeding evil upon evil. But this week, there was this report from Demographic and Health Survey from the Ghana Statistical Service. But the numbers are very worrying, especially if we say we are a Christian nation. And yet, the numbers they are quoting for people having extramarital affairs and all that, it really, really means Ghana, our Christianity is a joke. Because if all these numbers say, like, let me just quote some, 18.4% of married men, which is approximately 2 out of 10 men, have had sexual affairs with women who are not their wives or partners within the last 12 months. That's very serious. The findings of the Ghana survey, or GSS, were contained in the 2022 Ghana Demographic and Health Survey, GDHS. Then another one says over 168,000 married women cheat on their spouses. This is serious. 168,000 women. And then about 3.5% of women aged 15 to 24 have two or more partners, while 46.1% have had sexual intercourse with persons who are neither their husbands nor live with them. The numbers are just, it's not good, because in a country that Christians dominate on paper, I mean, I said on paper because, I mean, in reality, that's not I mean, in lifestyle and in reality, clearly, we are not seeing many Christians. That's the truth. So if we have a census giving these high percentages of Christians in the country, and yet you have such alarming numbers engaged in all sorts of adulterous and fornication and all type of lifestyles, then the question then is, who are the people engaging in these things? You know, who are they? They are the same numbers, percentage-wise, the same people who claim to be Christians. And I believe it's really a worrying trend and a worrying signal that this sends, because it just shows the church is really not doing its best. Something is not right. Something is not right, because if
you know, I believe, okay, they did this based on the health and the demographic. But if they were to go further and to ask relationship with their religions and their denominations and all that, attendance to church, frequency of attendance to church, you would have seen a very startling and worrying trend, because you would see a lot of these people are still in church and are Christians. Oh, yes. And that's the seriousness of the type of Christianity we are practicing in Ghana and largely in a lot of countries now. What we say is Christianity. You know, we've created a subculture, let me put it that way, where we do things to please our conscience and we call it, our spirituality. So we claim we are Christians, but in reality, our lifestyles do not depict that of Christians. Because if it was so that we were Christian, a real Christian nation, and Christians are the majority in government, most are Christians and all that, clearly we shouldn't be where we are as a country in terms of all the corruption and all the bad things we see and hear around. So it's the Christians who are engaging in all these things. So there's something wrong, you know. It's so easy, everybody says he's a Christian, everybody calls himself a Christian, but yet their actions are at variance with what they profess to be and what they call themselves. And this is where the issue of the failure of the church comes in. Because see, sometimes people don't want to hear these things, but that's the fact. The church is failing. We shouldn't deceive ourselves with the large numbers, because it's the large numbers who are involved in these same statistics. And it's not strange. You talk to pastors, then they'll tell you, fornication is rife in their congregations. They know it. One pastor friend, I'm sure he may be listening by now, and he said he went to a church and he met the pastor, and the Lord gave him a message to give to this other pastor. And whilst he was delivering the message and all that, the pastor, all you could do was, it's true, the fornication is in the church. That's all the man was saying. And it's like, wow. But this is the reality. They know. I've had pastors tell me that there's one pastor who, senior pastor, he in Accra, he told me that he stopped asking some questions during marriage counseling, because virtually the answer was the same. Because virtually all the couples he was counseling were engaged or were already active sexually. So you see, the issue of immoral life under the guise of Christianity is that worrying. And recently I was having a chat with a friend, and he went to Japan and came back. Whilst they were chatting, and he was just telling me, he's like, "Charlie Ben, this is your people, you know, I've been there before." So like he was telling me when he was going, he informed me and we're chatting, and he was so amazed about their morality and their uprightness and their their ethics and all that. And I shared this a few years, BBC did a report on it, and that was amazing for BBC to do such a report. But they did it, they were comparing the Japanese to the Western society, where sexual lifestyle is common, that's the norm. But in Japan, they have this strict, they are in terms of the average lady would wait until marriage. Yeah, so they have in the developed countries, they have one of the highest virgin rates or percentages amongst their population. And BBC did a report on it as to how it's possible. And though they didn't get the full conclusion, but I can understand, because from what I know when I went there and how I engaged with them and all that, their culture, the cultural value is so strong. But then I was telling this friend, we were chatting, and you see, if cultural values people can uphold cultural values to the point where they can abstain from sexual sin, and a Christian that is speaking in tongues, supposed to have the Holy Spirit, cannot abstain from sexual sins, then there's something wrong with our Christianity. Because you cannot tell me that there's more power in culture than there is in the Holy Spirit. I mean, you think about it, what I'm saying. So is it there's something wrong? Because if someone who is not a Christian, these Japanese, them, they are not Christians, but they can say no to fornication, and a Christian who is speaking in tongues cannot say no to fornication, there's something very wrong with our Christianity. Because then how else can you explain? Because someone is using the power of the moral upbringing and culture to say no, and the one who knows this is even a sin and is even supposed to be empowered by the Spirit of God to abstain cannot abstain, then where lies the power that the person claims he has? And so this is the issue of the Christian. There's something wrong with the Christianity we claim we are practicing, because the power in it is missing. I mean, if the real power in Christianity is what people are living by, then there should be a different lifestyle that we should be seeing among Christians. But that's not the case. I mean, that is not the case. And this is really one of the worrying trends. You know, when you see such news, it really brings a lot of issues to bear that something is not going right in our society. And the church can take a blame for it as well. Pastors do not want to hear these things, but sometimes the truth has to be said. Churches have to take the blame for some of these things, because if these people are coming from churches, are in churches, belong to churches, and these lifestyles are openly being espoused as a norm, now it's being standardized, then God help his church. God help his church. But, you know, there's still hope, because there are still those that are living right. There are still those that are standing by the principles of godly character and godly living. And I believe that's what should be the aim that we should strive to achieve and strive to be. The remnant will always be there. There will always be a remnant who will stick to the standards. And the masses... See, the danger with all these numbers, the masses thing we talk about, is that when the storms begin to blow, it's the masses, these are on the fringes, they are the ones who easily fall away. Yes, because they are already half in the world, half in the church, and that's the type of Christianity that is the commonest now, the pseudo type. We are here, we are there. So lukewarm. We are in the world a little, we are in the church a little. At least give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and then give to God. You see, they want to please the world, enjoy the world, and they also want to feel the societal connection that they are Christians. So they play both ways. When they are in church, they are in church. They say all the jargon, they speak all the loudest tongues. When they are in work, at work and at school too, they flow with the tide. Everybody is doing it. We are all doing it. Boys, boys, girls, girls, everybody is doing it. You see, so there's no demarcation, clear cut line that I'm a Christian on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. No. Very few really stick to that principle that I'm a Christian all through the day, all through the week. Now most will say, oh, I'm a Christian on Sundays only. After church, we go on sabbatical and then flow through the world system till Sunday morning or Saturday evening, when we acclimatize again into our spirituality. Then by Sunday morning, we get into the full mode, and then we are ready for church. And then we go and socialize with God and then with the members in church. Then that is it. The cycle continues. This is the Christianity that is largely being seen. I mean, we are largely seen around. And I believe listeners of this program, I believe, are largely not part of this cohort, this group. And that's why we talk about some of these things, to help ourselves and sharpen ourselves and encourage ourselves. Anyway, I'll be back after this short break.
Again, talking about the love. needed most. All these afflicted ones, they feel their lives just fade away after face the end alone. So we say, to touch, to hurt.
Welcome back to Issues of Life on Spirit 88.3. Eben, the program is Issues of Life. All right. So, tonight I'm reading two verses, and that's what I'm using. Proverbs 11:30. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he that winneth souls is wise. Let me repeat. Proverbs 11:30. Take note of this verse. Read it. Think about it. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he that winneth souls is wise. Then the next one, Daniel 12:3. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. Daniel 12:3. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. You know, Solomon puts it clearly. He that winneth souls is wise. You know, the reason why he would classify it as winning souls is wise is the wisest investment we can look at, anyone can look at. It's the most important thing we can look at, because this life is not just what we see it as. You know, we grow up, we are born, children at a kid's age, go to school, eventually get a career or a profession, trade, whatever, grow into adulthood, we leave, we get married, for those who get married and get children, have children, grow older, get into pension age, retire, good old age, live on pension, enjoy their grandchildren, for those who get and have them. You know, it's like a cycle. Then at a much older age, whichever age, they die off, that's it. Then so we grow, we die, we are born, we grow, we die. That's the normal trend we are seeing. That's how the world has been all through. But then life is beyond this cycle, because the people dying, it's not just that they are dying, they are just living this phase of this life, the body phase, and that their soul continues to live on forever. So that's what makes it so important, and that's why Jesus can easily classify it as, you know, there's nothing in this world that is more valuable than a soul. So what shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? So all the money that Elon Musk has, Zuckerberg, Amazon, the boss, I've forgotten his name, all their billions and of dollars, you can bring all that money, it cannot buy one soul. That really gives a perspective of how important it is for a human being. That's why Jesus says, when one soul turns away or turns to the Lord, or turns from sin, repents, there's rejoicing in heaven. Just one, there's rejoicing. That shows the seriousness of a soul. For heaven to rejoice, the angels to rejoice in heaven because one person has repented. Wow. One, just one. It means a lot to God, and it means a lot to heaven. One. And this is one question we should ask ourselves. As we became Christians, it doesn't matter how many years, have we been able to make the angels happy at least on even a single occasion? Have there been any rejoicing in heaven because some people or someone repented because of us? Because of our action, someone repented and there was jubilation and, you know, celebration in heaven, pampana, celebration, one person has repented. And who is the one who initiated that repentance? Oh, it is so-so-and-so, brother, so-so-and-so, sister, so-so-and-so.
then the record is updated for you. You brought a soul into the kingdom. I mean, for many believers, we've been Christians for only God knows how long, and never have we been able to do such a thing. For many, they did it when they were in their active ages as students, when they were Joshua's on fire for the Lord, winning souls, evangelism. Then God bless them with a good life and a good marriage and a good home and family, and that was it. God, okay, thank you for how far you brought me, but now we can no longer do the things we used to do when we were in school. You know, life has changed. Life is progressive. We've now gotten to the adulthood, so we can't be doing those things we used to do when we were young and, you know, youthful exuberance. You know, we can classify it and call it whatever way we can describe it and give all the reasons and everything. But the reality still stands that he that wins souls is wise. So it doesn't matter whether you win souls as a child or win souls as a teenager or as a youth or in your adulthood or an old age, it's still a wise decision to make. You win a soul, there's no age restriction. The bottom line is winning a soul makes you wise. So the question is, first question is, are we wise? We know it ourselves, whether we are wise or not, we know it. So if we are not wise, what are we doing to make ourselves wise, or what are we doing to be wise? And that's the importance, and that's the reason why being on this campaign and talking about this on this the last few editions, two editions. And I believe the reason is for our own good, aside the fact that God demands that all of us do it. Those who obey, the reward, you get the reward. It's you. I mean, it's for your own good. It's for our own good if we decide to do what God says we should do, because storing up treasure in heaven is a wise investment. It's a wise thing to do. Ultimately, we should go beyond just seeing it as an assignment or as a mandate. And I believe the biggest challenge we are struggling with in this whole thing is the fact that we ourselves need to be revived. That's the starting point. That should be the starting point. We, the believers, we ourselves need to be revived, because the average believer is more of in a lukewarm state of a sort. So spiritual things like winning souls or people dying and going to hell, it doesn't really move us, because our hearts are hardened directly due to we become too numb. Nothing moves us. These things don't move us again. But before we can really be able to get to the point of seeing the seriousness of it, our hearts should be broken. We ourselves should begin to see the seriousness of the issue, and we should feel concerned. Our hearts should be broken before we can then see the importance of doing something about it. And that's the reason why the song I played, the words are so touching. If you really listen to it well, the words are very, very, very heartbreaking. And it's important we really assess ourselves, examine ourselves. Are we failing? Have we failed? Are we still concerned? Are we not concerned? You know, we should ask ourselves the questions. Are we just Christians for our own good, only our good, or for the sake of others as well? And when we see ourselves as ambassadors of Christ, then we cannot just be concerned about ourselves only, because then we have to extend whatever we've achieved, whatever we've received, onto others as well. And I believe that's the essence of these discussions talking about, because we should be changing our mindset, we should be changing our way of thinking towards souls, how we see souls. We shouldn't just be seeing people as people. It's time we see them as souls who need help, souls who are crying out for hope. And that is the seriousness of it, because if, let's say, somebody is traveling to Accra, I mean, you know, okay, Accra there, he's still, you okay, he's relocating to Accra, okay, you can talk on phone and all. But when you are, the person is crossing over from this realm of life, and that is it, and whatever happens beyond this realm, you cannot do anything about it again, then it means it's a serious thing to look at, and it's a serious thing to factor in. And it's important to look at these things. You know, for instance, there are some professions who are so blessed. Nurses, for instance. Nurses have a great opportunity. Example, nurses who are in critical care, those who are really, really dying, and you know these people are dying, and oh, these people, they have such a brilliant opportunity to help many, many, many people get into heaven. Yeah, because you see, fortunately in Ghana, we are not like in the US where, or in the UK where you cannot, you know, some countries where you cannot share the gospel with people in the hospice, you know, hospital care and all these things, you know. In Ghana, we don't have these restrictions and limitations. So in places, in a society like Ghana, a nurse who is serious for the Lord and really, really, really is concerned about souls, oh, and you can really help a lot of people. You know they are, you know the person is dying. You know it. I mean, help them. Share the gospel with them. Point them to Christ. You know, because that's one, as for that, those in those departments, seeing people dying, is that you can amass a lot of crowns for yourself, because heaven, help them to go to heaven. Help them to go to heaven. Help them to go to heaven. You win more souls than even the evangelists who are doing big crusades all over there. Because hospitals are some of the terminating points that people leave, people die. So as the people are going and you have the opportunity, why not? You know, and I believe, you see, it's all about we understanding who we are and then the assignments that God expects us to do. But unless we ourselves see ourselves as agents that we can be used, we will see people dying, and it's one of, you know, people die every day, one of those things. We are seeing them as people dying, but not as souls departing. You see, that's the difference. If we see it as people who are just dying, well, and people there, they are dying, people are dying, so what's the big deal? But if we now see them from the perspective of souls departing, and as to where they are going is an issue, whether, you know, heaven or otherwise, then now we see that, no, then if I can do something to help this person not to go to hell, let me do it. You know, so it's important we start thinking along these lines, and I believe you would understand the importance of it as we keep talking about it, and then we discuss other things regarding how we can go about it and all these things. And God will help us and guide us and give us the needed grace and the wisdom, the resources, the things we have to, the printing of things and all that, to help in some of these things. So this is Eben. God bless you for listening to this edition. And I believe you've been blessed. And God willing, next week I'll be coming your way. I think I have some messages. Unfortunately, I couldn't. Okay, let me just read. And Theo says, God bless you. Okay, God bless you too. May the Lord Almighty have mercy on the church. It's true. It's very true. The church is sick. And the church needs revival. That's why revival will come. And the revival will come in, really, really sanitize the system, because the way the church is going there, no, we need the grace. All right, God bless you and good night.